You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully on today's episode, which is being dropped on the 23rd day of November 2020. I have the great pleasure of bringing in author Dave Jordan, who is the author of the upcoming book, Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood, about the great Dave Parker. This show is available on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcasts. I mean, you're staying home during these, well, let's just be honest and call them strange times, odd times. Be sure to tell your smart device to play podcasts Locked On MLB, or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. And hell, we're talking about a pirate today, so why not Locked On Pirates with Ethan Smith? You could follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Well, look, this is a long time coming. We've been playing a little bit of email tag, you're it, trying to get this to happen. I'm absolutely thrilled that the writer of Fastball John and the upcoming book, Cobra, is here. Dave Jordan, thanks so much for joining the show.
Sully, thanks so much. And I'm so glad we were able to get this together now. It's been a long time coming. I'm excited to sit down and chit-chat with you.
Yeah, and this is we'll quickly just talk about your first book, Fastball John, which was about John. This is one of these great instances. John DeQuisto, right?
Yeah, it's Johnny DeQuisto.
John DeAquisto, okay. DeAquisto,
yeah. And he was basically, he was the first round draft pick for the San Francisco Giants. He was picked 17th overall in 1970. He came in with about 100 mile an hour fastball. And he ended up, I mean, he pitched a slew of innings in the minor leagues. And the Giants just completely kind of wrecked his arm somewhat. He was the 1974 NL Rookie Pitcher of the Year. And in 75, he kind of blew his arm out. But he did. Part of the story is about his comeback, how he spent some time with the Padres in their AAA ball club and their AAA affiliate in Hawaii. And we talked a little bit about Hawaii baseball. And then we talked about his great season as a middle reliever for the San Diego Padres. But really, it's a mix of the music of his times, as well as the misadventures that he had with all of his teammates on the field, off the field fun, and some misery that he had later in his life. But he's working for Major League Baseball now, and he has a really incredible story. And, you know, it's a book that a lot of folks really took to, and it's considered something of a cult classic among the deepest baseball book readers. So I'm pretty blessed to kind of have that distinction with the book.
Well, I have not read the book. I will confess, but I'd love to. I love stories like that because we always focus on the superstars. And this is someone who, you know, may have had moments of great, obviously had a fantastic rookie season in 1974. But I remember his baseball card from the first bunch of years. I started collecting Tops in 1978, which is right around the time he was pitching. So I remember his Padres card.
Yeah.
And it was funny that I stumbled over his name because I was, you know, five or six collecting baseball cards. And we all witnessed me attempting to say his name out loud for the first time in my life, because there's a bunch of names that you see on a card that you never say out loud. And I'll never, like, there's, I'll never forget the first time I tried to say Juan Benicas's name. And, what, you know, and Win Remerschwall, former Red Sox middle reliever, you know, forget about it. And I always felt that we should be grateful that it was Tommy John who had that surgery and not Win Remerschwall or Al Hrabowski or someone like that. It just would have flow off the tongue so nicely. But so you are, I mean, are we, I'm in my 40s. I remember the tail end of the 70s.
Yep.
I mean, is your memory included without, you know, you don't ask a gentleman his age, but do you have a stronger memory of baseball in the 70s?
I mean, my memories go back to watching the 1977 All-Star game, sitting on a shag, laying on a shag carpet, while my father and while my World War II era uncles are playing pinochle. So I go back to that mm-hmm. era. You know, I was at a 1976 Mets game with my father, who's wearing a suit. You know, he's one of the last men to wear a suit to a baseball game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching Dave Kingman slam a home run over the left field fence at Chase Stadium and then Seaver pitch the game. So that's kind of how far back I go.
I have a thing I call the rule of seven, which is your first real sensation of following a sport, having your first player, your first solid memories are around the time you're about 7 years old.
Yep, that sounds about right.
And for me, seven was 1979.
Oh, wow.
And the first World Series. Now, I do have vague memories of the red-capped Red Sox when I was growing up in the suburbs of Boston. I do remember Louis Tiant and mm-hmm. Bill Lee, but mercifully, I didn't understand what a pennant race was.
Right.
So I couldn't, what was happening in 1978, I had no comprehension of. And right. So 1979 was really the first year that I followed the real ins and outs of baseball. And I remember distinctly there was a cover of Sports Illustrated. I can't remember if it was from 79 or 80, but it was from that era, which had Jim Rice, yep. who was my local MVP god, yep. and Dave Parker. Mm-hmm. And they're standing back to back.
Yep.
And Jim Rice looks like he's a dwarf compared to this alp that is mm-hmm. Dave Parker. And the headline of Sports Illustrated said, who's the best, I think, or yep. who's number one?
Who's number one?
And Jim Rice is kind of looking up at Dave Parker, like, what do you say? And Dave yeah. Parker has this huge grin, holding up a finger, implying, sorry, Jim, it's me. And as a young child, I'm thinking, who is this person who would dare say he's better than James Edward Rice? And but it was Dave Parker who was really one of the best players and one of the great players of his era, and I think should have gotten a lot more Hall of Fame consideration, at least. Mm-hmm. We should have had a bigger discussion of his career. And he is the subject of your book, Cobra. I was glad it was not the novelization of the Sylvester Stallone cop film. Tell us a little bit about how you became how you got to work on this writing mm-hmm. project about the great Dave Parker.
Well, I will give you a little taste of the photo shoot that took place for that SI cover. You know, basically Parker had driven, you know, it took place in Florida, and Parker drove north from Bradenton, and Jim Rice drove south from Winter Haven, and they met in the middle. And basically Parker recalls, you know, shaking Rice's hands and just being, damn, he has this big, strong hands, Jim Rice. Mm-hmm. And he had this real, like, you know, the cliche, the hearty handshake. You know, Rice kind of gave him the hearty handshake. And it was just like, wow, this guy's got incredible hands and those great wrists that we always talked about through mm-hmm. the years. And they had a nice interaction. And, you know, he would see Rice throughout the years during the All-Star games, All-Star weeks. And they had a nice little relationship.
It's funny, you had mentioned the 1977 All-Star game. A guest I had on my podcast several years ago was Ellis Valentine, the great and very funny. He gave me a really funny, wonderful two-part interview.
Yep.
Didn't hold anything back and was gracious and humorous and honest. And he talked about beyond just his great days playing in Montreal,
right.
his dislike of Gary Carter and the episode, the episode of Fantasy Island that he appeared in. But right. He also talked about when he was at that All-Star game that there was a little bit of a one-upmanship between Dave Parker, mm-hmm. Dave Winfield, who was with San Diego at the time, and himself about who had the best throwing arm.
Yes.
And so, totally impromptu. This was not an ESPN event. I don't think ESPN existed at that point. This was not shown on Wide World of Sports. This no. was just three stars impromptu showing off who had the best gun. from right field.
Yeah, and it really happened before the game, but the poetic moment of that All-Star game was the three of them, Parker, Winfield, and Ellie Valentine, mm-hmm. as Parker calls him, they got off the bus in front of Yankee Stadium, and the three of them at one time just kind of looked up, and they were just in awe of the beginning of their careers, right? I mean, yeah. It's Parker's third or fourth season. It's Valentine's, you know, first full, and Winfield's his fourth full season. But it was their first All-Star game, and they're all just kind of witnessing what's supposed to be the beginning of their elite careers, mm-hmm. The elite phase of their careers, and they all experienced that together. And I've actually had a conversation with Ellis Valentine about how cool that would be if somebody could put that on a painting, just three stars together. But yeah, they basically, the PR folks from who were managing the All-Star game basically came to them and said, let's just throw this together and see who's the best or whatever it was. It seemed to be from what Parker tells me in good fun, Winfield had the accuracy and Valentine had the strength and Reggie Smith just had the power.
I forgot Reggie Smith was involved in that too. Yeah. That's right.
And he talked a lot about that each of them had this singular quality, and Parker was kind of coming into his own, because Parker came up as a catcher. This is only like 7 years into his career as an outfielder. I mean, he didn't wear an outfield glove until he got to the professional baseball. So that was pretty much, his learning curve was watching the other outfielders and then just using his arm and also what he learned from guys like Clemente. So really it was a special moment for those three guys, in addition to Reggie Smith, who they met up with. But for the most part, Parker has very fond memories of Ellis Valentine, who actually contributes a chapter introduction in the book. And Dave Winfield, who also contributes two chapter intros. So we basically, we looked at, how other books have a foreword, and it's right. Always, you see the book, it's like foreword by Yogi Berra, foreword by Bob Costas. And Dave and I decided, you know what, let's have a foreword in every chapter. So we have chapter introductions for every chapter. Pete Rose, Willie Randolph, Al Oliver has a couple. Pete Rose has a couple, John Candelaria, Manny Sanguian, Rennie Stennett,
Oh my God, what a great cast. In fact, I was just talking about, just on yesterday's podcast, that I felt that when you're talking about players who may not be Hall of Famers, but should have had a closer examination of their career, I brought up Dave Parker. I also brought up Al Oliver,
yep.
who was within shouting distance of 3,000 hits.
Yeah.
And could have extended his career a couple of years as a part-time player in a DH when he was with Toronto at the end of his career. And collusion ended his career. That he went off of free agency around the time the owners decided not to sign free agents. And that was the end of his career. And I think that you take a look at his great career, and he was obviously a teammate for many, many years with Dave Parker in those great Pirate teams.
Yeah.
He's just someone who I think has gotten lost in the undertow because he didn't make it to the Hall of Fame and he's not an MVP. He's someone you shouldn't sleep on in terms of the greatness that he had in his career. So and he's wonderful in the Doc Ellis documentary.
Yeah, they were very close. And we talk a lot about that. We talk extensively about that in the book, and the one thing that Parker stated to me from the outset was basically he wanted to spread some sunshine on some of the other fellas. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to tell the story. And what became, what was initially just a simple 256 page or 336 page memoir became close to a 500 page book about the peak of Black baseball through the eyes of the Cobra. And that's kind of what we're looking at. So we talk a lot about Al Oliver and what a great teammate he was, mm-hmm. and just his relationships, not just with Doc Ellis. And we actually go into that in some ways that people haven't really thought about historically, but also how he nurtured Dave Parker in many ways too.
That's an amazing angle, which I had not thought of, quite frankly. One thing about Dave Parker's career that I think is fascinating in terms of where he fit in Pirates history. Clemente died on New Year's Day of December 31st of 72. Yep. New Year's 73. I don't remember exactly if it was which, but it was on that time.
Right.
And his final game was the 72 playoff game, which they were on the verge of winning the pennant, and they blew the pennant in the ninth inning. And Clemente dies. It's obviously he was the face, the heart, the soul, and I believe eventually would have become the manager of the Pirates as he was doing managing teams in the Caribbean League.
Yes.
In the offseason, Clemente dies. It's devastating. And the very next year is Parker's rookie year.
Yep.
And he doesn't become a star until around 75, 70, or 75, he becomes a star.
Yeah. Yep.
But that the – so it wasn't the clean passing of the torch like Yastrzemski to Williams to Yastrzemski, Yastrzemski to Rice. But that being said, right field was a – super charismatic, larger than life figure was going to be in right field in Pittsburgh, but you couldn't have someone who is as diametrically opposite in terms of a personality and a persona as the stoic, I don't want to say that I wasn't going to say DiMaggio, like he was Clemente. He was his own being. He was his own. He was a god of Puerto Rico, but he also was this looming figure in all of baseball, and in comes this unbelievably wild character in Dave Parker, and kept the torch going for a bunch of years.
Well, you know, it's funny. I'll that we have one part in the book. I think it was in 1972 when they were having batting practice in Bradenton, Pirate City, which is an incredible complex, and it's. Excuse me. It's much like Dodger Town, where it's basically a field and a complex of four baseball fields plus a dormitory, almost like a three-star circa 1972 Howard Johnson / Holiday Inn. And it's we go into detail with that as well. But basically, they're having batting practice, and Parker's just slamming the ball, and you can hear the chain link fence from 350 feet away. And then Clemente's behind him, and there are reporters there. And then Clemente just waves Dave Cash into the batter's box, like, and he just basically said, "I'm not following that."
That's something right there.
Yeah, yeah, and he was in many ways a mentor to Parker, and a story that I heard from Manny Sanguian that I mentioned on the documentary about Parker was that basically, they were having a intra-squad or an exhibition game. And Parker's out there and he's throwing BBs from center field, and Clemente just gets off the bench and just starts kind of laughing. And Sanguin's like, "What's so funny?" And Clemente's like, "I'm looking at my replacement." And Sanguin's like, in Spanish, Sanguin's like, "What are you talking about? He's playing center field." And Clemente's like, "I know a right fielder when I see one."
Yeah. Wow. That is some praise right there. And when we take a look at Parker's career, I was talking about that when I first started collecting baseball cards. There's some things I just thought I didn't quite understand how things worked in baseball. I assumed at the end of the year, only the Yankees, Dodgers, Phillies, and Royals were allowed to play in the postseason. I thought at the end of the year, Jim Rice had to lead the league in home runs. George Foster had to lead the National League in home runs.
Yeah.
And Rod Carew and Dave Parker were the batting champions. And they would. And I just felt that was, well, yeah, and it's amazing that Foster and Rice were the home run leaders for both 77 and 78. And the first 2 years I collected cards were 78 and 79. So they're always a year behind. And the first 2 years of the batting champion were both Carew, both years were Carew, and both years were Dave Parker. And so I just assumed that's how it works every year. And, and it sort of seemed that way. That 78 season for Parker, there was, if you look at no matter what metric, if you like traditional stats, older stats, whatever you want to use, leading the league in batting average and slugging and OPS and OPS plus and total bases, intentionally walked the most, stole 20 bases, hit 30 home runs, 177 runs batted in. I mean, there was no metric that you can use that he wasn't just unbelievable. That was just his coming out. One interesting fact, not on that year's All-Star team.
Yeah, well, very true. It happened in the midst of the injury when he had the collision at home plate. Mm-hmm. And the truth be told, that he was invited to be on.
Okay.
And I mean, it's not a lot made of it. And I think Baseball Reference should kind of almost include him there. They don't. But he was invited. And he was told that since he was in the hospital, basically, he wouldn't be able to participate. So they never officially put him on the roster. But yeah, he was invited to be a reserve. I mean, for the Dodgers that year, just gone crazy with their. I mean, Rick Monday was one of the leading vote getters for the outfielders. He started along with Lozinski and Foster. So yeah, Parker, I think he came in fourth or fifth there. But yeah, he was kind of invited to be on that team. And he would have been had he not had the collision with John Stearns.
So I do want to skip to 79 because I love that team with all my fiber. I've been in Pittsburgh a grand total of one day in my life, and yet I can honestly say every player who played even a day on the 1979 Pirates, I consider to be family. Yeah. You know, because they were family, as the song sang. And that was obviously, people remember Stargell. And that was really the year that Stargell completely took over the reins that had been handed over from Clemente. But it was Parker. I mean, Parker put up unbelievable numbers and had a great World Series, too.
Yeah, he did. And, I mean, really, that season, I mean, kind of, if you want to say it, the Cobra book is going to be, you know, so many things. But what it also will be is sort of the definitive history of that team. I mean, we essentially name check nearly every person who was on the roster, played one game for that team, other than maybe Gary Vargas or Harry Seyfried, who's on the 1980 Pirates prospects card. It was on the roster in September, didn't play a game. And Joe Coleman, who came over in midseason from the Giants. For the most part, we do talk about the origin stories of nearly every guy on that roster. So, you know, if you really are a big fan of 79 Giants, we go
Pirates.
Or the Pirates. you know, if you're a big fan of the Pirates, I mean, we basically, you know, we name check and the origin story of nearly every player on the roster.
Those of you who are listening in and may not know exactly what we're talking about, that year you had two very colorful teams. I mean, they were colorful literally and figuratively. I mean, the Orioles wore bright orange uniforms. Another person who was a guest on my podcast was Don Stanhouse. Whose bright orange hair was almost the same color as his uniform, and his mustache was unbelievable. Both teams had great characters. Both teams had Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Both teams had players that were kind of irresistible, that seemed fun. I mean, this was not about a good guy and bad guy. They were both two teams that encapsulate everything you want in terms of fun with baseball. The Orioles seemed to be the better team on paper and took an early 3-1 lead in the series. But this was also the series. This is at the height of disco.
Yep.
And the great Sister Sledge song, We Are Family, became the official sort of anthem. And in fact, on the roof of the dugout at Three Rivers Stadium, it didn't say the Pirates. It said the family.
Family.
And the Pirates wore the flat pillbox hats. In 1976, for the centennial of baseball, a couple of teams started wearing these round, flat-topped hats for that year. The Mets did it. The Pirates did it. The Cardinals did it. And I forget, one or two other teams did it. Mm-hmm. But the Pirates were the only teams that kept them.
Yeah.
And they looked so distinct, that sort of flat top. Yes. And Willie Stargell, who was the co-MVP of the National League that year, sort of this larger-than-life teddy bear figure, who was called Pops, even though he's younger than I am right now, which makes me feel very, very old.
Yeah.
And he would hand out what were called star drops. I know you know this, Dave, but for some of our listeners are too young to remember Francisco Cabrera. So Willie Stargell would hand out a star for the player of the game to have sewn onto their hats. And so you saw them coming out to the play and their hats are covered in stars, which I think the commissioner would not allow today. But the other great thing is that they had three combinations of uniforms where they had a black top, a yellow top, and a top that had yellow stripes that were accented with black pinstripes. And the same for their pants. And there was no rhyme or reason of how they wore them. It's like they had two spinners and they spun them and whatever, okay, here's what the top is, here's what the bottom is. And they were like, we're gonna wear black top, yellow bottom, striped top. There was just, it was just everything clashing and it made it very colorful. And when the Pirates were down 3-1, they never seemed like they were gonna panic. They were playing We Are Family and the likes of, not just Stargell and Parker, but Bill Madlock and Rennie Stinnett and Omar Moreno and Bill Robinson. I'm trying to remember who else. I'm trying not to click on the thing to cheat here. And they had the great pitching staff that had Candelaria and Burt Blyleven and Grant Jackson in the bullpen, Tecolvi,
Jim Rucker.
Bibby. Yeah. You know, it was so many wonderful players, and the Pirates ultimately won. It was the last World Series they won, but it was the first World Series I watched, and it was absolutely, it's one of the reasons I'm such a huge baseball fan, is that at that point in my life, I had never stepped foot in Baltimore or Pittsburgh, and I was absolutely engrossed in the outcomes of these games as a seven-year-old sitting in the watching on a black and white TV in the upstairs room in Massachusetts. And Dave Parker was a huge part of that team.
Well, you know, it's funny. You're not alone in that. I mean, I had a chat with the former All-Star outfielder, Preston Wilson, and he said the exact same thing that you did, that he fell in love with baseball. And baseball was the family business at that point. His dad, Mookie Wilson, was in the minors at the time, but you know, he fell in love with the game, sitting there watching the 79 series, watching Parker, watching Stargell. And so it's like you and him and thousands, hundreds of thousands of others, you know, alike had that same feeling, you know, coming into their own with baseball through that series. It was a magical, magical series.
And Parker, who grew up in Cincinnati,
yep,
ultimately left the Pirates and after the 83 series season, there was a lot of bad stuff happening in Pittsburgh in the mid 80s, a lot of the cocaine trials and everything like that. And Parker was given the heave ho by the Pirates after all these great years, wound up with Cincinnati, where he wound up being teammates with all these Reds players that he used to be up against. I mean, like Rose was his teammate and manager. Perez was washed up but still on that team. Concepcion, it's so weird to see him teammates with some of those guys, but he wound up in 85 having one of his best years, his great comeback year in 85, where he was a legit MVP candidate. And when my family moved to the San Francisco Bay Area, he wound up being part of the A's team that won the World Series, and he no longer had his speed. He could still hit. But, man, if you want to see something slow, watch a Dave Parker home run trot when he played for the Oakland A's.
Yeah.
He was in no hurry, and he had, like, two fingers, like, pointed down as if he was kind of, you know, he was dancing to a song that we couldn't hear, which I assumed was Sister Sledge. But, like, it was like, okay, he had a home run. I'm gonna go to the concession stand. By the time I come back with my hot dog and Coke, he'll still be circling the bases.
Oh, Lord. He developed that in Cincinnati, and he calls that the thing. He's like, he's going, he's, I'm going to do the thing now. And we laugh about that every so often. And it's really, that was just, that was a little extra addendum to his prowess in those later years. He really got a kick out of that. And that kind of sort of came back with his comebacks. Like, I'm back now, I'm here. You know, and everybody thought, as some folks had written him off. Nope, Parker's still here. The Cobra's still here.
He was two batting titles, National League MVP, twice the DH of the year. Lest we forget, he had a wonderful year with Milwaukee towards the end of his career before retiring with a cup of coffee is with the Angels and the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
And three gold gloves, three silver sluggers, and just a larger than life personality who is not doing well right now, who is not physically doing well.
Yeah, he's suffering from Parkinson's disease, and it was diagnosed in 2012. And, Dave has his good days and his bad days. Mm-hmm. But the times that I've seen him, I've seen him when he's had kind of a dark moment, and there are times where you see that twinkle in his eye and that wink that he's still in on the joke. And, but he's holding his own right now. And
it's one of the horrible things about Parkinson's is that it's not a memory thing. It's a motor thing. Mm-hmm. And, so when you saw Ali go through this as well, it seemed so cruel that someone who had such a larger than life personality, was so boisterous and cocky, but able to back it up and didn't give a damn what you thought about him, and yet played to the crowd enough that, part of him loved being part of the show.
Yeah.
To then have something where you need help moving and you need help walking. It just seems cruel, that it's such a horrible thing to happen. A horrible thing to happen to anybody. But when you think of who Dave Parker was as a physical and as a charismatic figure that just reached through that television in 1979, that, that I could see it when he was playing. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem right.
And it is very sad. But part of what he wanted with this book is that he really wanted to talk about the impact of relationships in the game. And you don't really, there's so many books out right now, especially books about, the Negro Leagues and the mythic, work of Jackie Robinson and what he did to really establish, black players in Major League Baseball. But, he wanted to talk about the relationships and how important they are in the game, from A ball all the way up to the highest levels of the sport, and sort of the corporate decision-making and roster moves. And there's a lot of analysis in that, and how that, that helped some of the fellas and some guys just who should have made it didn't. And there's a lot in the book that kind of discusses that and really goes into great detail and a big depth of what Parker experienced and what he observed.
All right. Well, hey, Dave Jordan, this is fantastic having you on. We have more to talk about, believe it or not. So much more to talk about. So everyone enjoying this show, listen, on Thanksgiving Thursday, we're going to drop the second part of this conversation, because we did something that I did creatively was something very similar to what you did creatively. And I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that more in depth. But Dave Jordan, tell people where they can find your stuff.
Well, basically, you can, the Cobra, A Life of Baseball and Brotherhood by Dave Parker and Dave Jordan will be available. It's available for pre-order right now on Amazon. And you can find that in bookstores in April 2021, around opening day next year, as well as Fastball John by John DeAquisto and Dave Jordan. You can find that on Amazon. Just put in John DeAquisto in the Amazon toolbar, and the book will pop up. And and you can find me on Twitter at InStream Sports. And my DMs are open if you want to talk Fastball John or Dave Parker or just about anything else.
And you can follow us on the free and easy to use Himalaya podcasting app and all the places you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnMLBPod. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Talking about the great Dave Parker with another great Dave, Dave Jordan. This has been Locked On MLB for the 23rd day of November 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.